Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. It's good to be back, and I hope your week is starting well. Let's get the pleasantries out of the way right off the bat. If you would like more from the Mod State crew, well, go to modstate.com. You can find all of the links to our social media pages. That's our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And did I say Instagram? Yes, Instagram. You can also find all of our op-ed pieces, as well as the links to the podcast there. You can also go to podomatic.com and on iTunes. And if you're listening to our podcast in any other outlet, tell your friends you can find it there. And of course, your word of mouth is always helpful. So today, John and I kick off the week sort of moving past net neutrality. It will come up in the podcast, but talking a little bit more about crony capitalism, the Panama Papers, and then the acquisition of Time Magazine by the Koch brothers. So if you don't know much about that, I think it will probably dominate the news or not. Over the next week, we just try to stay ahead of the curve. So anyway, let's get John on the line.
You want the envelope?
There. You take it. It's all yours.
You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass. You nincompoop.
What's up, dude?
I told you some time ago what a dog's good for. Yapping incessantly, eating trash, other animals' feces, eating some creatures' menses. That's where we're at with these creatures. Man's best friend. Well, that's very indicative of man.
All right, so backstory for everyone's like, what is he talking about?
You tell them what just happened, and they all know how I feel about dogs, but continue. All
right, so I have a 7-month-old chocolate lab and a 4-month-old Siberian husky. So my house is a zoo constantly. And I was just getting ready to record, and I hear my girlfriend go, "No, Bear, no." And I'm like, okay, well, I got to pause here real quick. Sent you a text like, dog got in the trash. Well, he didn't actually get in the trash. He has this, well, he's a lab, so he's food driven, and he managed to get a bowl of something she was eating off the table and was just going to town. It's like a crack addict, right? You put it right in front of him, and then you say, no, don't, you can't have this. And man, I even bought, for those of you who are anti this, I did buy a shock collar. I'm not shocking him. I'm using the bell or the jingle and the vibrate, but I got to break him in this habit. It's just a bad habit. But otherwise, he is a really good dog.
Mm. Yes. Now, if there's an oxymoron that I've heard, I get it.
I'm pretty sure when Sarah listens to this podcast, she's thinking, I wish we had a friggin' cat sometimes.
I mean, they have their own set of problems, but I will tell you this. Cats are probably, I could qualify this with studies, but I'll just go on personal experience. They're probably the most autonomous animals you can get.
It's 100%.
Like, little food, but then again, to certain people, they just show no love. Now, to me, I mean, I was at my parents' house, and this cat, as you point out, ironically named Nixon, this cat was with me right before I joined the Navy. He's been with my father more than anybody else. But yet, when I come back to my parents' place, this cat has got to be on my neck and shoulders. They don't show loyalty to everybody. I don't know what their deal is.
No, I mean, I've been around cats before, and we grew up with one, and they're great. Just
a different, completely different animal.
Yeah. I mean, I just think of it this way. If you had a 70-pound cat, it might be a terror.
Yes.
So my dog was, the same size as a cat. We probably wouldn't have the same issues, but it would probably
think about this
bark a lot.
I've long speculated this, that, you know, they kill anything within their size range. You know, my cat Nixon has killed possums. He's killed some young raccoons. Going, you know what? if he was bigger, he would probably be looking at me like something to eat.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
thinking I could haul this dude down.
So there's actually a, you bring that up, they kill anything. So there's a, just a side note before we get started. In Australia, they have a feral cat issue. And the government just put out a bounty on feral cats. And of course, that's got activists going insane, clearly.
And well, you saw what the congresswoman said. She said they're, the Australian woman, she said they're natural born predators that we must eliminate.
Well, and I think she's also talking about the feral cat. And in Hawaii, there's feral cats everywhere. I mean, they aren't, there's a certain point in their like lineage and genetics that changes very fast that you can't domesticate a feral kitten. It just doesn't work that way.
It's about 6 to 8 weeks, man, if you don't handle them. That's why, like, when our cat gave birth when I was little, my mother made a point of, we need to go out there once their eyes are open and handle them, because there's a very, very stark point, you know, a strong line of demarcation. If they're not handled, it's like, nope.
That's done. And so they literally kill millions of pounds of birds and rodents per year that are native to the island. So that goes with like native ground nesting birds, etc. And they literally have put a bounty out, and you just need to show a picture of it and you're good to go, I guess. I don't know what
that I've just always is. Cautioned along these lines. You know, this sort of thinking is what, in my view, some may disagree, but this is what allowed the spread of bubonic plague across Europe. It's like, oh, well, we'll just kill the cats because they're associated with witchcraft. And the next thing you know, Black Plague is everywhere. I'm going,
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, there is, as much as there's a probably a cat problem, it's probably better than a rat problem. That's for sure.
Yeah, cats are not going to infest your food sources.
No, not at all. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm
like wrong. In New Orleans, climb up through your sewage in the 70s when they had a cat deficit. Ugh. There were rats that would come up through your toilets.
All right, dude. When I was in Hawaii, I woke up one night. I lived out kind of in the country, as they call it. And I went to go to the bathroom and it was dark. And so I will admit this point, I was sitting down to pee. It was dark. It was 2 a.m. I did not turn the lights on. And I hear the sloshing in my toilet bowl.
Oh.
And I you're not expecting things like that to happen when it's dark. It's like someone's worst nightmare. So I flip on the light. I go back to the toilet bowl. And sure enough, there is a rat just swimming around in the toilet bowl.
Oh.
So I'm looking up, like, there's a skylight right above the toilet. So I wondered if it was in the attic and climbed sort of like through a hole in the skylight and fell into the toilet. But there's no way that physics.
It came up through the sewage, man.
Exactly. So now I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to do with this rat? And by the time I came up with the plan, and of course getting my phone because I wanted people to believe me, it went right back down the pipe. And sure enough, that's what they do. I mean,
they can breathe for incredibly long times underwater. And that's why, like, New Orleans had a problem in the 70s. They're like, hey, it's one of the few things they did right. You know, and let's bring in cats. It was a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, so then you get a little bit of a feral cat problem, but I don't know. Whatever.
They don't get into your food storage and pollute what you're trying to eat. Whereas rats are just
Yeah. I mean,
filthy.
They literally destroy the native bird population that was there. And I mean, it's kind of gross, but you know, it's what it is.
Like, which problem would you rather have? I suppose rodentious major or Felis major.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of them's a lot easier to take care of, I think, and it's not the rat. Obviously, history has shown us that. But
with that, monsieur.
Yeah, that's our case of the Mondays.
It is a case of the Mondays.
Yeah.
Rats that are hating on cats. There you go. Think about that.
Rats in your toilet. Think about that. I guess it's better than like a boa constrictor or something like that.
Or you could just have a couple of tabbies around and give them a little bit of food. Yeah, I promise you, your rat problem will decrease.
I believe it. I mean, they don't have the problem on the farm that in Iowa where my aunt and uncle live. So
the thing is, here in Metairie, you didn't get to see a whole lot of them. But in our old neighborhood, man, I'm telling you, the cats were huge.
Yes.
I don't know if they're eating nutria or what.
Nutria. That's a southern rodent right there.
Yeah, the genius politicians in South Louisiana thought, oh, the swamps are overgrowing their range, so let's bring in a rat from South Asia. And they didn't think, what do rats do best? And that's breed.
I was going to say, if anything, reproduce. That's it.
Yeah, so they have bounties. You talk about bounties. They have people go out at night and hunt them and bring the pelts in. You get paid for this. I'm going, or you could just get a cat, you know, because my mother had this cat when she was younger named Striper, and he would kill such rodents. And then, you know, they want to share.
Oh, yeah, bring him in.
So he would open, this cat was so long, he would stand up and with both paws open the door of my grandmother's salon.
Open the door?
And then, oh, yeah, he would stand up and, you know, how some doors rotate.
Okay, yeah.
And he would use his paws to open the door, and then in comes this rat that he's got. It's like, oh, Striper, thank you.
If we're on cats, we're going to make it our case of the Mondays. My mom told a story on Sunday morning when my dad was working, and she was getting ready to go to church, and the cat brought in a bird that he hadn't killed yet and managed to bring it into the bedroom. So she had this bird flying around the – it wasn't a bird. I think it was a bat that was flying around the – which is, for some people, probably even worse, just flying around the bedroom. She said she literally just – covered up and spent the next 3 hours until my dad got home with this friggin' bat flying around.
Those animals are so diseased.
I learned that bats, and maybe not all species of bats, but there are certain species of bats that they obviously carry rabies, right? You actually can contract rabies from a bat not being bitten, but just being in proximity to a bat. That's how contagious they are. Carrying rabies. So there's your public service announcement. I didn't know that, and I always thought bats got a bad rap. But
well, so what happened to the cat? Remember that video I sent you where the guy's like, you better get that thing, and his cat goes in there in midair, just whoosh, gets the bat. It's like, so what happens? I mean, are cats just that immune to stuff like that?
I have no idea. It's a really good question. Again, I'm hopefully a listener out there is more versed in batology than
probably the rest of them are going, okay. All right.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Cool.
Yeah. Maybe they're vaccinated. Don't you get cats vaccinated for rabies as well?
I think you do.
Yeah.
Mine have always been.
Yeah. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Somebody else out there is like, okay.
Yeah. We're approaching 15 minutes here of talking about cats and rabies.
You know, that's not very dissimilar.
No, yeah.
From what the actual issue is.
Oh, yeah, the actual issue. So I had said, so we had our net neutrality podcast, which was on Friday, and I hope everyone had a chance to listen to it. I think it's incredibly important, and we do need public opinion for net neutrality. But without diving too much deeper into net neutrality, we wanted to continue talking about leadership and the stuff like the Panama Papers and the well-connected in our world. But before we dive into that, I think it behooves us to, I think we'll just dive into the new acquisition that has been propagated on the news. And that is the acquisition of Time Inc., or everyone knows it by the magazine. And it's been acquired by the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers, you may or may not have heard of these individuals. If you haven't heard of them, you definitely have been on the receiving end of their propaganda. And they're billionaire brothers, and they're conservative, free market thinkers, and they do back various conservative think tanks and, of course, politicians that run as well. So
that's a libertarian idea, since Koch Corporation is originally, as I understand it, before it got into fossil fuels, was very much dedicated to agricultural machinery.
Yeah, you can see, especially out here in Colorado and other places, you'll have Koch companies, and they'll be mainly based in agriculture and farming equipment. And
K-O-C-H.
Yeah, K-O-C-H. You can look them up. But they did...
Koch Industries, that's right. That's the name of the Koch Industries Corporation.
So the Time Magazine has, and as well as People and Sports Illustrated, is going to sell itself to Meredith Corporation. It was a $2.8 billion deal, and the Meredith company will pay like 18 bucks a share for the legacy media giant. So it was approved by both of the boards of the company, and it's backed by $650 million in financing by the Koch Equity Development Company. So with that being said, it begins to open up questions about motive. And I think you and I, when we talked about this, we could take it a number of directions. It could be merely a acquisition for profit and for portfolio development. It's interesting that they would do it to, you know, like magazine type companies, but they're well known, well storied news outlets, if you call people a news organization, but I suppose they are. And, or it could be a twofold approach to profit and to guide the overall mission of these news outlets. And I think with People Magazine and Sports Illustrated, you're not going to see too much of a change in the formula. You know, Sports Illustrated is what it is. You can't really change the formula of sports. And People Magazine is entertainment, so you can't really change that formula too much. But Time Magazine, you most definitely could. And you had some interesting thoughts on it. And I think we'll find, as time goes on, whether or not their goal is to shape the opinion of Time Magazine to a more conservative-leaning message. But I think we'll only find that out when you see people leave that organization. And they very...
There's only so many reasons why they would do this.
Right? Yeah, really, you're right. Anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was cutting you off. I was postulating that there's only so many reasons why they would do this, correct?
Yeah. And I think if you knew the Koch brothers as this organization that only dealt with agriculture, only dealt with fossil fuels, and didn't really have much of a political bent, maybe they leaned more conservative, but you just knew that. But they do fund heavily on the conservative party and to politicians and to right-wing think tanks. So I don't want to jump out and make assumptions, but I had the same questions that everybody else did when we learned that this acquisition was going through.
And those were?
How does the mission or the message of Time Magazine remain the same under the ownership of such conservative and, I should say rather, very professed conservative ideological individuals?
And well, I mean, again, you kind of knew this was coming, right? Because Rupert Murdoch is getting older, mm-hmm. as all of us do, and his descendants are decidedly less conservative than he is. So there was going to be at some point some sort of acquisition or founding. Glenn Beck attempted this, has done this with his supergroup at The Blaze. We'll see whether or not that pans out. The big joke has been The Blaze about how much money they burn through.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you were going to see some sort of conservative group acquire a center-left publication. And I think this is a sort of example of this. And it's one innocuous enough. I think it pan off as, I'm not going to say as you have respected that it's propaganda from day one, but I definitely think you will see a change as far as this being about. I personally have considered Time to long have been a center, maybe at worst from a conservative perspective, center left publication.
Mm-hmm.
But this was inevitable, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would think that over the course of any type of news organization that they would have, over the history of a news organization, I mean, generally news organizations will go through ownership changes or shareholder changes. I guess it's not, to me, it's not surprising that someone with that kind of wealth would acquire some sort of outlet. It just, and again, this could have been Bill Gates or it could have been Tesla, and we might not be having the same conversation. It's just who acquired it and what their influence has been to the Conservative Party and their ideals. Now,
that leads into several questions, doesn't it? For instance, you and I referred to in the prior podcast about not only net neutrality, but the Panama Papers and crony capitalism. And to me, it's very difficult to discuss this without discussing the tax code. I'm sure there's some listeners out there going, wait a minute, what? Well, okay, let's back off here for a second. And the man that co-founded with Paul Allen Microsoft, Bill Gates, who is a strong, openly, quite publicly stated Catholic with, as he puts it, little c conservative ideals. And look at that his own corporation, Microsoft Corporation, and their purchase of LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Well, they chose to, rather than using their 30 plus billion dollars in reserve savings to buy LinkedIn, they would rather use $16 billion in loan format to acquire that social media firm. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Because they save money. And this is not indicative of poor business practices or unpatriotic business practices on the part of Microsoft. This is them saying, hey, we're going to save money by borrowing to acquire LinkedIn rather than repatriating, bringing our international revenues home to be taxed. This is rather simple from a corporate perspective. Where this becomes troublesome and problematic, obviously, is more across the board. We've seen Chinese firms acquiring firms in Hollywood. Okay, and either way you slice it, brings up the issue of nationalism and or protectionism. Mm-hmm. And at what point do we say this is dangerous to allow communist Chinese firms to own Hollywood film corporations? At what point do we say to Microsoft and Apple, oh, well, that's funny. Yeah, you will bring your tax dollars home. Mm-hmm. We have the authority to do that. We've done it. I mean, that's where this becomes troublesome, right?
Yeah. And so, for example, you bring up that point, and it happens across the globe, and you bring up that word nationalism. And I don't think for those who hear that word and sort of cringe and think of something like Charlottesville.
It's a dirty word.
It is a dirty word, but there are some forms of nationalism that actually benefit Americans overall, and this is one topic. So, for example, in New Zealand, I've got family that lives there, so this is where I come from my quote-unquote authority to talk about this. But in New Zealand, they have a lot of Asian immigrants, and so namely very wealthy Chinese businessmen look to expand their portfolio beyond China. And so example would be Hollywood. But the other example is property. And in New Zealand, you can actually spend, we'll just pick a number, $5 million. And you can become a citizen based on the amount of money that you are able to contribute to New Zealand. And this becomes a nationalistic issue, regardless of whether you're left or right leaning in that country.
And that's completely foreign to Americans. It's completely, to use a better word, unknown to Americans, because we don't think of our immigration system that way.
No, not
other countries.
All.
I'll say this to Americans: other nations, including Israel and France, they look at who is coming into their country legally as how are they going to fiscally contribute to the overall picture. Whereas in America, we see that sort of rhetoric as unfair, as unkind. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I think so. You do see regardless of how wealthy you are, my family in New Zealand they're wealthy, and to world standards, and it still is a point of contention because it isn't a desire to become a citizen of New Zealand because you believe in the government and you believe in the overall ideology that the Kiwis stand for. It is merely to expand portfolios. And I'm generalizing, of course. There probably are a number of individuals that do it for a good cause. But it's this idea that you've got vast amounts of wealth and that buys you access, and where other people have to wait because they, quote unquote, can't contribute millions of dollars to the economy. So that kind of swings us into this topic of crony capitalism or the Panama Papers, whatever you want to talk about, when it just comes to the top 1% in the world and their connections. And we've referenced the Panama Papers a couple times, and just to do a backup on what that is, it was in 2016, I believe it was the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, it's the ICIJ, got a hold of these leaked documents from a shell company or basically a financial management company out of Panama, which is why they're called the Panama Papers. And they found the clients of this company, obviously incredibly wealthy celebrities, athletes, businessmen, politicians, were putting their money into shell businesses that would then funnel the money back into Panama, which is a very tax ease, if you will, country. Now, it isn't that it is illegal. Even Rex Tillerson was in those papers, and they found that he had a venture company in Yemen, who would then funnel part of those profits back to this company in Panama. It isn't illegal. The company itself, where they funneled the money back to, was linked to tax evasion, money laundering, and other underground black market type ventures. But the act of funneling the money to that company isn't inherently illegal. But where it becomes a problem, and I made this analogy with you earlier, if we had a country where, let's say we had a flat tax, and I made $50,000 a year, and I was taxed 25% on that income, do the math, doesn't really matter. But that same wealthy individual would pay 25% on the $50 million that he would make. If he is able, now that's $50 million that is accounted for in this country. So if he's
that's
really...
That's where the problem enters in, because it's about declared income, and that's exactly where we need to change our tax structure, but continue.
Yeah, so someone like me who would make $50,000 a year is not really, unless I'm doing some cash under the table business, I'm going to be declaring my entire income. I really don't have the means, the resources to funnel that money anywhere else. But if I can declare $50 million, but then let's say I make $100 million, and I can appropriate that additional $50 million to a shell company or to a company like this company that was in Panama, I am then not taxed on that additional $50 million. So it begs the question, is that individual who's making $100 million that he knows about contributing equally and equitably to the tax system and back into the system in the United States? And the answer is no. So who picks
up? That's a very firm answer. So you look at, we discussed this before, look at the people that are arguing for, oh yes, we need a $15 minimum wage in this country. And we're not weighing in here whether or not that's right or wrong, okay? Just follow along here for a second.
Playing along.
We talk about, oh, well, yes, we need a $15 an hour minimum wage. But those very same firms that are arguing for such a minimum wage are on the sly positing their jobs in countries where they can get away with paying people $3 to $5 an hour. So it's very disingenuous. It's like, yes. Well, wait a minute, where do you come from? Where do you get off telling us how to pay our workers here when you're not even a part of the process?
So, and even worse, those companies who are pushing back on that $15 minimum wage or whatever minimum wage you want to create.
And it's just in vogue right now.
Exactly. And those same CEOs or those well-connected individuals who are making, you know, whatever, $50 million a year, have the ability to, let's say McDonald's, I only pick that because it's an international company, would then have the ability to divert that money that they make internationally to a company that can manage their finances and not be taxed on that money. So it makes it even dirtier to say, well, look, we can't afford to pay $15 an hour, yet that same, the money that could be appropriated to that is then shelled off somewhere else that's not taxed.
I'm telling you, they got a real problem coming. And I say they, as in the proverbial 1%, mm-hmm. because with Google Earth and Bing service and these matters, you can get and you can satellite into areas such as Roswell, Georgia, and then go to areas of Atlanta where the wealth is, shall we say, not so poignant. And we've got smartphones in everyone's hands. We've got encryption algorithms on the internet we can hardly break. The government can hardly break. And so therein lies the problem. At what point does the proletariat say, well, we're just going to take it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a bigger problem coming down the pike. You know, go ahead, punt the ball. Keep punting the ball into tomorrow. But this problem, there will be a reckoning. And you and I are proposing, I'm saying let's do this economically. Let's do this through the central government mm-hmm. before we get there. But the reality is, I don't know that we're going to do it.
Well, it becomes so incredibly hard because we talked about this in net neutrality at the last podcast. So in the case of net neutrality, it was the FCC that had oversight and they wanted to pump that down the road and to a different agency who would have probably a harder time with oversight than just keeping the internet under Title, or rather the net neutrality under Title II. So we take that analogy and we transpose it onto federal prosecutors. And we talked about how their resources are limited, their manpower is limited, and how do we expose this kind of not necessarily nefarious activities because it's legal, but this lack of, or this unequal distribution.
It is nefarious, Nate, because the fact is, if this was done by a small level firm in Georgia or Louisiana or Michigan, if this is a small business firm, whomever would be getting prosecuted and probably jailed for this. Okay. The fact is, it is nefarious because it's a double standard that's being set.
It is a double standard.
Well, you know, you shoot pool with the CEO of ExxonMobil, then you don't have to play by these rules.
Exactly. And that's where the Panama Papers sort of make this correlation to wealth and connection. And if you go and research the Panama Papers, probably the most notable fallout was the prime minister of, I believe it's the prime minister or president of Iceland, who didn't declare that his financial assets, and he was obviously leaked in the Panama Papers, and they called him out during an interview, and he walked off the interview, and two days later, he resigned. And that's the problem is unless there's leaks, you'll never know what's going on. And it does become a double standard that we expect the American people to pull their weight, to contribute to society. But for whatever reason, there's another percentage of individuals with the resources to skirt the system. And the American taxpayer effectively picks up the bill.
We saw the same thing in the election. We saw the same thing. Nate, seriously, let's put our cards out on the table here. Forget my allies that have been at and are still at Politico, okay? What other publication could survive being given, emailed, and you could look this up on WikiLeaks, people. I'm not going to do your dirty work for you, all right? Get your hands dirty and find it. It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
WikiLeaks, their email orders from the Clinton campaign to Politico saying, we're not really fond of this story. It's not very favorable to the Clinton camp. And by God, if within the day, the story wasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a complete pay-for-play system. You know, this is outrageous.
It really is.
We're supposed to believe that, well, Mod State and every other media firm are starting out on the same footing. Bullshit.
No, absolutely not. So this is where the importance of this ICIJ, the Investigative Journalist Consortium, and it really, that's what it will take. And it's literally like 200 investigative journalists in 70 countries, and they just collaborate on these in-depth stories and these leaks because it takes that much manpower. They're getting PDF files, so they can't just get a file or let's say like a terabyte of information and then just click keywords. They literally have to go PDF file through PDF file, create Excel files and look for keywords and create their own network in order to look through these documents. There's no federal prosecutor in the United States that has that manpower to be able to do that. It is not equal footing at all.
I did it for myself with the Politico Clinton emails. That's why I'm saying,
yeah,
do it for yourself.
You can.
Because you and I are not reaping any profit from this.
No.
I can just tell you, as God is my witness, your children, your grandchildren's lives on this. Okay. The Clintons sent out this email and by God, Politico changed it.
Yeah. And that just is one example of how being connected, aside from the Panama Papers, changes the narrative how you want it.
There's networking and there's networking, Nate. There's networking to, hey, yeah, man, oh, let me tell you, I know a guy that, you know, does X amount of, he can host you guys and he can help you get a sponsorship. That's one thing. When we're talking about, oh, I mean, look, don't worry about that. When this guy in Melbourne at the bar here, yeah, he's going to make all your worries in that front go away. All you're going to do is play ball with the Clinton camp. And I'm picking on the Clinton camp here, but that's just what happened in this case. Okay, could just as easily be the Rothschilds or the Bushes, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really it's a good example to show what connection and money can do for you. And I think that's how we, I guess, in a way, tie it back into the Koch brothers' acquisition of Time and a couple of these other news outlets. What back room, what smoky backfilled room that we're not seeing is dictating narrative at these type of sites because of the connection and the money that's there. And it really doesn't create an equal playing field for the American people. And that's what you need to know. That's what the average listener needs to know, that you're picking up the bill in a unequitable fashion that the rich and well-connected don't have to do based on the resources that they have. Now, I'm not bashing people that make money through capitalism and do it fairly and contribute to society. I'm not saying that. I mean, I think we'd all love to be millionaires, but it's this code of ethics by which you can live in or by based on the socioeconomic status. And this is not new. This has been going on since mankind's been around.
It's not new, but where this needs new curtailing, if you will, where this needs a certain degree of new oversight, that no, there's nothing, as I've put it countless times before, do I envy them? Yes. Do I begrudge them? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bill Gateses, the Paul Allens, the Tim Cooks of the world, more power to you. Okay? Where this becomes egregious, where this becomes a problem, a cascading problem, is where, as in that neutrality, oh, we're not talking about deregulation so that everybody can get a bigger, you know, more readily get a seat at the table.
Exactly.
You know, we're not saying we're going to deregulate so that everybody has the chance to sit down at the table. We're deregulating, in very strong, bold quotes here, so that we can manage the 6 to 8 or so people that do have a seat at the table. This is about power. This is about control. Don't get confused.
Exactly. And that's why that frame of deregulation is...
it's falsehood.
It is. And I think that's probably, just on the fly thinking here, that's probably a huge argument to deregulation in any sense, that it can sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? It can funnel power to just a few individuals and doesn't create a very equitable competition field, if you will, and competitive field, rather. And that's... again, I don't know what it will take for some sort of, dare I say, revolution. That's not what I'm looking for.
Well, that's where I'm coming from, with the whole Google Earth thing.
Yeah, and
how long until your everyday layman sees what's going on in Roswell, Georgia, and then looks to areas, you know, South Atlanta and beyond and goes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We don't have the same shot here.
No.
And how long until they take it?
And the boiling point is when you can't afford to live in a place like the United States making the wage that you are. So
where are you going to go?
That's in some cases, it's a twofold.
Can you afford to go?
You can't. I mean, I suppose you could pack up and move to Ecuador or like Honduras or somewhere.
I'm sure they'll be glad to see you.
In some cases, maybe they would be. But even then, I mean, it's an impossible feat for most people.
I hope you speak the language.
So, yeah, it becomes a twofold thing. It's like, what can we do to make it easier for the average American? Not easy in the sense to be lazy, but easier to just live, have a family, and maybe that nostalgia 1950s where you can work on the line and make a good living for your family and retire.
Anything, just work honestly, decently. But it's this situation where I more and more see the whole point of certain echelons, certain elements of our community that go, we're being pushed in this situation where we have to underskirt the rules. Mm-hmm. We have to go beyond,
and
we have to go to extra legal measures, and then, oh, but you get caught. God bless it, you're going.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
And I think the other issue, too, is if it came to the point where that expatriated money or there was some sort of fair allocation in the sense that we're not just giving people money to give people money or a distribution of wealth. I'm not suggesting that. But I'm like losing my train of thought thinking about
this. I'm not suggesting that either, but the fact is this whole, well, everyone pays their fair share, bullshit.
Well,
you're not talking about, this extra, all right, we'll stop using that term. Expatriated, meaning they've made this money outside of the United States. They've made it in England, elsewhere in Europe, in Asia, and in Africa. And, therefore, because it's overseas, we don't owe the American people a damn thing. Well, actually, yes, you do.
Yes.
Because the American people, Microsoft and Apple and Ford and GM, we gave you your start. And GM and Chrysler, guess what? We bailed your asses out.
Mm-hmm. And the banks, the
banks too. So, yes, we do have a say in what happens to your money. And this is very disingenuous. This is downright treasonous, mm-hmm. Our treatment of the American people. You know, you pay your taxes, you better have 7 years worth of tax records, and we're going to bail out GM and Chrysler and the Lehman Brothers. But by God, don't you have that tone with us about, you know, a bailout for student loans. You know, it forgets you.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, is if for whatever reason this money came back and it was pumped into the wages of blue-collar workers and people were able to work one job and have a good life.
Where's the bailout for the American people, Nate?
Listen, statistically, and I'll find it. It's fine because I'm just as fired up as you are. Statistically, as case in point, for money that goes to these finance companies in places like Panama, the rich are saving their money. They're not
good for them,
and that's fine. But they're not contributing equally to society. So when you're that money is being saved for whatever legacy or for whatever reason you're doing it for, but not paying your fair share, it is treasonous. It is disgusting, and it is poor ethics, and it will come to a head. The thing is it's not going to happen by a federal prosecutor. What? Show me any CEO that was held accountable in the 2008 financial crisis.
The dollar voting, Nate. None. As I've told you, the People's House every 2 years. It's like the Creedence Clearwater Revival song. You know, it's featured on the Forrest Gump soundtrack. But the song "Fortunate Son."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, talking about, well, it's funny, but when the IRS, the tax man, comes by your house, it looks like a rummage sale.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about eat the rich, okay? To my well-to-do acquaintances out there, good for you. But if you think for a split second that your wealth should buy you the opportunity to bypass the taxes that the rest of us have to pay, you're sincerely, sincerely mistaken, okay? Mm-hmm. You think that your wealth buys you a position from which to dictate duty to the rest of us? No, I think your wealth dictates a position from which you owe as much, if not more, to the American society. And I'm not talking about, again, eat the rich. But your position has not bought you, as much as you would like to think, preemption from duty. That's absurd. That's not the reality. That's not what our founders wanted, and that's not the way we need to have it today. And I'm being dead serious when I say this. That is going to result in bloodshed. At some point, the lower echelon, the working class, it's going, oh, really? Well, we'll take it. How about mm-hmm. that?
Yeah. I mean, you just have to look at history. Look at revolutions. Look at, I mean, look at the
look at France, 1792.
Exactly. Look at the United States. I mean, in maybe it's a more ambiguous argument there, but it
is it?
Probably not. I don't think so. I mean, taxation without representation. And it will come to a boiling point. And the more that this is brought to light by organizations like the ICIJ, the more people are going to get fired up about it. And if you don't know what's going on, it behooves you to do the research and to do as little as getting on to the FCC's website and giving your opinion, to just allow the funneling of power to small collective groups of individuals, though you may call it under definition of capitalism, does nothing for this country and does nothing for the progression forward.
Okay, making a profit, as my father put it, making a profit while cheating makes you the mob. It does not make you a capitalist.
No.
Okay, anybody can make a profit if they're cheating. And the fact is, if you're making a profit while flouting the laws of our federal government, that makes you a cheater. It doesn't make you special.
No.
Okay, and I'm an old school Nixon Republican saying these things. This is beyond capitalism.
Absolutely.
This veers into crony capitalism, mm-hmm. and you making a case for, oh, I'm special somehow because I was. No. If you want to establish normality here, you want to maintain some semblance of the status quo, well, I promise any of you, better get on board with tax reform. That means as concerns extranational tax dollars that are made overseas outside of the U.S. because otherwise, I guarantee them to you, it's coming.
Yeah. Well, and it goes just to your point, and that is why tax reform is so necessary. I mean, the loopholes you can find just in this country alone allow for the same activities that you can get internationally. I mean, which falls under the tax code anyway. So it's as boring as it might sound to the average listener, the average American,
it's not going to be boring when there's bloodshed on your front lawn.
Yeah. So I don't know. I we haven't really hit on these type of things, and we are in firm agreement with probably 100% of it.
We come from different perspectives, but the bottom line is we want equity. And equity is everyone that makes a dollar in this country above the poverty limit pays taxes on that. Well, Nate, you and I have to pay taxes on what we're doing right now. But
yeah.
There are certain people that believe they're beyond that. They're above that.
Yeah, and it's a good example.
They are exacerbating the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show you that regardless of where we individually stand ideologically, we still believe the same exact thing when it comes to moving the country forward and fixing these issues that we have. It doesn't matter whether I think distribution of wealth is correct or you think free market capitalism is correct.
It doesn't matter. It's on the verge of collapse.
Mm-mm. It doesn't.
It doesn't matter. It's like, again, like Ripley said in Aliens when she was tossed about the paper, and she said, you know, all this bullshit that you think is so important, you can kiss all that goodbye.
Yeah.
We're at that juncture right now.
We are. And I think we're calling it out right now as we see it. I don't.
2026 to 2032 is when economists, regardless of their political spectrum, say the Social Security Trust Fund is going to be bankrupt.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen? People are just going to nicely
accept it for
what they're owed?
Like, oh, no, I'm good. Well, just what it is. No.
Royalty we have in Congress that was never meant to be, they are going to be held to account. And I rue the day. I really do. By God, if I didn't say it.
It would be one thing if something like Social Security went under and everyone was giving their fair share into the program. I'm not discounting the fact that there would be some sort of upheaval, but to have a program that would fail because a certain wealthy population or portion of the country wasn't giving equally into that. I mean, I have a breakdown of where my taxes go, and a good portion of it goes to these type of programs, and we don't have to get into whether or not we think these programs are good or not. It's the whole point of what we're talking about right now is giving equally into these programs.
And when it also swings the other way too. You've got, as Mitt Romney alluded to, his percentages might have been off, but you've also got an echelon of this country that believes, well, we don't ever have to serve, we don't ever have to ban. Oh, you too are sadly mistaken we want this great country to continue.
Exactly, which is for a whole other podcast topic probably.
Completely different, but the song remains the same.
Exactly. So, well, I think we've beaten this to a dead horse, if you will, and we will be back this week, as we always are, and it's a pleasure to have you on board. And as I said in the intro, you can find all of our op-ed pieces at modstate.com, our podcasts, and our links to our social media. I think an op-ed is probably warranted for this conversation, just to articulate better. So that's something I'm going to start working on and hold myself accountable, because I'm putting it out in the air. So,
well, au revoir.
All right, we'll see you.